welcome into Poke the Bear episode 148. That's Connor Ryan. I'm Evan Marinofsky. Connor, what is up?
Evan, I'm doing well. How you doing?
Doing great. Doing great. I know we're recording this Thursday afternoon. You're about to head into the Celtics for game five. Do you have any hot predictions so people can listen after your prediction has come to fruition or not? Do you have any big predictions for this game?
Well, I predicted before game four they were going to lose by double digits. So I'm going to make the same prediction for game five. And we'll let the chips kind of fall where they may. So that's my official prediction is kind of have none, but I don't know what to make of this series at all. So
steamrolled. Yeah, it's funny. Everyone was making the 2004 Red Sox comparisons coming back from 3-0. And just that talk kind of inspired me to go back and watch 4 Days in October on ESPN. And I forgot how good of a 1 hour documentary that was. But I was like, I'm not letting this color my view of the Celtics. I can't then be like, oh, the Celtics are the next one. You get the injuries to these guys. Maybe that helps them or something. But I don't have much hopes. I don't have much expectations, but we'll see if they pull out game five. You know what team did win a series and move on to the championship? The Florida Panthers.
Panthers.
I feel bad for anyone that decided to stop watching hockey or fell asleep after game four of the first round, because I think they'd be pretty stunned when they came to and saw, oh, wow, the Panthers have won. I think it's 11 of 12. Hey, by the way, the Bruins are the toughest out. Solace. The Bruins were the toughest out of Carolina, Toronto, and
them. Get the banner ready, Evan.
Hang the banner. Best regular season in history and the Florida Panthers toughest out in the playoffs so far. And the question is, are the Panthers a team of destiny? Did you run into, I don't remember who tweeted it. It was someone from the NHL. They tweeted that the Panthers had the lowest amount of time in the playoff picture during the regular season of any playoff team or any team that went to the Stanley Cup final other than the 2019 Blues. So, but are they a team of destiny?
I mean, you look at just how they've been able to orchestrate this thing from being, as you said, out of the playoff picture. The fact that the fate wasn't really in their hands. And this, if the dipshit Penguins managed to win a home game against the crappy Blackhawks, they wouldn't even be in. Like, that's all
that
they...
Did you catch that Athletic story about the Panthers, Penguins? Yeah.
Of how much of an absolute jabroni Ron Hextall is and who could have seen that coming? Yes, yeah, exactly.
Crazy how that works.
But I think you look at just how much had to go right for them just to get into the playoffs. And then, I mean, where they were from being down 3-1 to the Bruins, a minute away from getting bounced in a game 7 on the road, and how they've been able to reel off, as you said, 11 of 12, but it's also not like they've been like, you look at 11 wins in 12 games and then you're just steamrolling everyone, but they're also like coming back in games, they're winning games in overtime. I mean, we know how long some of these games have gone on. They've gotten the chances to go their way and they've scored. Bobrovsky stepped up in a big way after being, as the kids say, mid for pretty much his entire time in Florida. So you have to, you have to be capped to Florida on what they've done and the fortitude they've had to get through this grind of being the underdog time and time again. That being said, Evan, should this make you as a Bruins fan feel any better? No.
Hell no. No, not at all.
Absolutely not. I'm sure we'll dive into this right now, but like you look at, yes, Florida now is a team of destiny. That's because you catapulted them into that by refusing to land the knockout punch when you had 3 games to do so. I mean, whether it's the OT gaffe with Ullmark in game 5 on home ice, the Marchand breakaway, game 6, 7-5 game where you had 2 leads in the third period and coughed it away. And in game 7, as we know how that ended. It's, again, give Florida all the credit, but in order for any team to go on a miraculous run, you need some teams that open the door for them, right? They made it a lot easier for them. Bruins, by choking it away, led to this, Cinderella run for the Panthers. And I don't think that's been the case. I think a lot of Bruins fans are very cognizant of that. They're well aware of the fact that you look at this road that Florida's been on, Bruins just as easily could have been on that same road, whether it's playing the Maple Leafs, who again, very good team, but You look at how Samsonov fared in that series. You had to turn to Joseph Wall in that game. You look at Carolina, which, again, I think people mentioned them at a deadline not doing anything. They needed some, you know, guys that could finish plays. Don't have Pat Chiaretti or Svechnikov. Couldn't score at 5-5 in that entire series against Florida. You look at the, if you're a Bruins fan, you're looking at that road that the Panthers have trudged through. Right there for you. It was right there for you. So, if anything, especially how I assume we think the Stanley Cup final matchup is going to be, again, we're waiting on the results of Dallas-Vegas, but I think we have a fair guess as to what these two teams are going to be. It's going to be a fun Cup final, I think, for Bruins fans, right? Whether it's the team that you should have knocked out that is now trudged through the same path you could have done, and then Bruce Cassidy, which narrative is going to speak for themselves, and the fact that we don't get Bruins Golden Knights, which holy shit would have been a unbelievable Stanley Cup final. We didn't even get that, Evan.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons to just be heartbroken continually, and it's not going to end, by the way. Like, it's going to continue. You're going to get this thrown straight in your face in the Stanley Cup. The one thing that is interesting that I want to bring up a bit is you mentioned the path, you know, Maple Leafs in net were an issue. The Hurricanes can't score goals. They had injuries. There was something the Panthers have done throughout the playoffs that I want to give credit to Mike Kelly, I think, who kind of pulled out the stats on this. I think he's with the NHL or NHL.com. And, you know, in today's game, it's so much more of a puck possession game. That is the new NHL. That's, and I think it's a good route that it's gone. It's more entertaining. It's smarter. It encourages more creativity. The playoffs, though, can be a car crash. I mean, the playoffs are a different animal, as you've seen. And as, you know, the Bruins' best regular season team went in the playoffs, wilted like it was nothing. But there's one thing the Panthers have continued to have picked back up and have done. And it's dump the puck out of their zone and dump the puck in the other zone. And eliminating these chances for mistakes, turnovers in the neutral zone, things like that. Now, I'm not saying teams need to go back to that, but it's clearly worked for them. And I think they sort of embraced the whole idea of, hey, you know, our defensive unit with Mark Stahl playing a fair amount of minutes and Radko Gudas playing a lot of minutes and, you know, not being very deep, we can't do what the Bruins can, you know, were able to do in the regular season. And we can't do, you know, the Maple Leafs, the high skilled, you know, Maple Leafs and the way the Hurricanes play. And yes, they got a lot of puck bounces and that sort of helped, right? Like that eliminated their ability to make mistakes. Now, again, I'm not advocating for it, but I think it's an interesting point of that's kind of been a big reason, I think, why they're in the Stanley Cup final now, because they took out those three teams that were much better than them because they played like that.
Yeah, it's almost like that's what good coaching does, right? Is it addresses your flaws.
Yeah.
It addresses your flaws. And again, I think you don't have to be a hockey savant or anything to look at their decor and be like, is this the most talented team on paper? Hell no.
Not even close. Not even close.
But that's good. That's good coaching, is finding areas and, you know, implementing a system where you're playing to your team's strength. You're negating risks or ways your team can be capitalized against. And you've seen it. Yeah, it's, is it the flashiest style? Is it the most, you know, up-to-date style in terms of how to operate? No, but it works for what that decor is. And again, you've seen it. This isn't like it's a team that's, you know, trading chances or anything like that. This is a team that is executing as one unit. You even look at, again, different sport, but like look at Miami Heat. The Miami Heat are not the most talented team, you know, out of the, you know, top 10 teams in the NBA, let's say, right? But they have a system in place that they play as one unit and it all works out and minimizes the amount of risk you have for having a team that maybe on paper doesn't stack up to a team like the Celtics or the Bucks or what have you. And again, that's, I think, credit to Paul Maurice and what his entire coaching staff has done, that when you have this team on paper, it's, again, it's hockey. It's not as simple as looking what's on paper, looking at maybe the underlying stats and just have it be the end-all be-all, right? Like, that's not how this game works. It's why this game is the best and also the worst in the playoffs in terms of predicting these things, is it comes down to sometimes a little bit of luck, sometimes a little bit of chance, but also it's about how you, you know, work with what you have and get the best system in place. And again, Florida's done that. If you asked anyone looking at this decor before the playoffs started, is this a decor that could take you to a Cup final? Everyone would be like, hell no, of course not. But as you said, credit to them for implementing something that, again, is playing to their strengths, and you know, it's credit to their coaching staff and what they've done. I mean, it's doesn't fall as much as you look at a guy like Bobrovsky, who's been on a heater, Matthew Tkachuk, who's been, you know, unreal for them. So many people have to pull in that same rope to get to this point. And so far, there really hasn't been any weak link on a Florida team that has proved many people wrong over the last month and a half.
That has a lot of players who could have been the weak links. And I mean, you just, again, I look back at, and the guy Mike Kelly tweeted out kind of a, like a 3-minute clip of, you know, the stats of dumping the puck out and dumping it in, and even brought up Paul Maurice's introductory press conference last year. Now, that's a team, and we'll get to their general manager in a second because he's up for a similar award as Don Sweeney, but that's a team that made a ballsy move. I mean, they had Andrew Brunette in there, said, you know, we don't think he's fit to be the head coach, brought in Paul Maurice. Maurice gives the quote of, you know, you can't, you know, you don't want to put like mud tires on a Lamborghini, but you do need to know how to drive in the rain. And, you know, again, bit of a throwback to dump the puck in and all those things. I mean, how many times in that first round series did you see those Florida defensemen flipping the puck into the neutral zone? And basically giving it to the Bruins and saying, let's try to make you make a mistake. Now, we're not going to make a mistake. You make the mistake. So again, I mean, it's a simple game and they forecheck hard. And, you know, the Matthew Tkachuk thing has, I mean, has anyone been more him in this playoffs than him? I don't think anybody has stepped to the plate to the amount that Matthew Tkachuk has stepped up. I mean, it's incredible to watch this guy. And to think, I mean, I even tweeted this after game four of the first round, trying to fight Olmark and just like coming unglued. And you just look at how incredible he's been.
He's been a difference maker. Yeah. I mean, even just look at this Carolina series. I mean, how many did he factor into every single game winning goal? I think in all four games, right?
I
mean,
I think he did. Time. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, it all comes down to, I mean, he's already a guy that is a top three, you know, Hart Trophy finalist, but to win in the playoffs, again, you need role players to step up. I feel like every team that goes on a run has multiple guys. You look at them and, you know, years ahead, you look back and be like, oh, remember how great they were in that series? It's like, you know, you look at like 2011 with Dennis Seidenberg, these guys, Rich Peverly, and you're like, oh man, those guys elevated their game. But you also need your superstar players to take another step forward. And Tkachuk's been that and more. He's been money throughout this playoffs for them.
Money. Money is right. So in other news, the Bruins did make some of their own news. Don Sweeney nominated for GM of the Year. No real surprise there, along with Jim Nill of the Stars and Bill Zito. I almost said Barry Zito, the pitcher. The big left-hander, legend, general manager of the year. Legend. Take it left out of Moneyball. Left out of Moneyball.
Yeah, the best 12-6 curveball award goes to Barry Zito.
But Bill Zito of the Panthers. And Sweeney has a real case. I mean, maybe the best case if you're just basing things off the regular season. You look at, you know, I mean, obviously the Mitchell Miller thing was a fiasco. But, you know, on the ice, you look at Pavel Zacha. That trade was that, you know, trade paid off. Re-signing David Pastrnak. The deadline trades, he didn't give up a lot and he got a lot back in return. Put them in the best position. I mean, again, no one's blaming Sweeney for why they're out. They were out after round one. Do you think he gets it? Because, I mean, I think the other obvious one is Bill Zito with the Panthers. I mean, ballsy move, takes out the coach, puts a new one in, goes out and makes a real hockey trade, which we'll get to later in the show, you know, and kind of makes a lot out of nothing, but does it well. I feel like Sweeney has the edge, but
yeah,
I don't know. The playoff success is hard to keep out of my head. I know it's already been voted on, but
I think that's the biggest thing, right? If it's factoring the postseason, I don't know how you look at what the Tkachuk trade has done to them. Because I think when the Tkachuk trade happened, and even for, I think, extended stretches of the regular season, I think we were all in agreement, like, Tkachuk's been fantastic for him. It wasn't anything with being with a loaded line in Calgary. Like, he's a legit superstar player. But, you know, Florida's losing a lot of defensive fortitude by getting rid of a guy like Uyghur, right? Like, if it was Tkachuk,
we said that all year.
All year. And again, like, I still think there's some validity there. Like, Uyghur is a very, very underrated defenseman and would have helped them probably even more. But you got to, again, give to get in this league. But I think when you look at just regular season, I don't know how you look at what Sweeney did in terms of, you know, making move, you know, getting Bergeron and Krejci back for that amount of money. The Zacha trade, which, you know, worked out very well for the Bruins in terms of you have not only a guy that, you know, what scored over 20 points over his career high, but, you know, have him as a an option there for a top six center down the road, right? Like, you added that guy for a veteran in Holla who is going to probably leave next year anyway, right? And then you look at whether it's signing Pasternak to his extension. You look at, you know, taking a team that already was very well built and well constructed and then adding Bertuzzi and Orlov and Hathaway on top of that. Listen, I don't know how anyone can make the argument that when you look at who's at fault for this team, you know, coming up short, doesn't fall in the management, right? Doesn't fall in tweening those guys. I think they put them in the best position possible to go on a deep run. So if you're looking at just regular season, you know, production results, what have you, it's tough to kind of pass up, you know, Don Sweeney in that regard, which, again, who probably one of many Bruins who will be there at the NHL Awards in Nashville, which, again, probably won't make it feel any better that they literally stopped playing the end of April.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's going to be like, oh, I guess this is a, I don't really want to be here, but here we are. The other thing is he made a coaching move, which obviously, you know, Jim Montgomery looked awful in the playoffs and had a horrible first round. But I mean, during the regular season, he helped them get to the best regular season in history. Again, I don't care about that. But when this was voted on, that was all there was really to go off of. So yeah, I mean, Sweeney should get it just based off the regular season stuff. Will get it. But the Bill Zito stuff is interesting because Zito made the most ballsy moves. You know, again, to can Brunette, who's, you know, young, seemed to be a young, solid head coach. Now he's in New Jersey. Brunette seems to be a guy that's, you know, in the mix for jobs and probably will be for the next couple of years if he doesn't get one this offseason. The Tkachuk thing was huge. And obviously that's been examined by a lot of different people, but we've touched on this a teeny bit. Is we'd love to see the Bruins make some sort of a hockey trade. You know, where can you upgrade your team? And Huberto was a top point getter for them. I mean, he was, I think, I don't know if he was he number one last year for them? He was either one or two. I don't have the 2021-22 Panthers stats in front of me, but he was a huge contributor for them for a long time. And to deal a franchise stalwart like him for Tkachuk, and also to deal away a, you know, number two or three defenseman in Mackenzie Weegar, that takes a lot of guts. Is there a path for that to happen with this Bruins team? We touched on this a little with Marchand. I don't know if he's really the guy you want to deal. And we've touched on with Ullmark, but like, is there a hockey trade you can make that doesn't involve just, we want to save money against the cap?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to depend on, again, it takes two to tango, right? So you got to find the right fit there. But
and now everyone is going to want to do one of these hockey trades. So it's
which
like,
also could lead to some hysterical results, because I don't think all of them are going to work as well as Tkachuk, right? So you have that risk as well. But I think when you look at the Bruins and what they have to move, whether it's a guy like Ullmark or a guy like, you know, take your pick, Hall, DeBrusque has a lot of value. But again, do you want to move a guy like him? Of course, like, I don't think it's going to be like a one for one, like, you know, cataclysmic swap like that. Like, you know, Tkachuk, Huberdeau, and Weegar is like, you know, steps, you know, I wouldn't say star players, but right up there, right, in terms of what they provide.
Also, Tkachuk made himself available via trade. That's the other thing. Tkachuk, is that you need someone to come to the forefront and say, like, you know, Florida didn't just hit up Calgary and say, we want Tkachuk. And then they just did it. Like, Tkachuk wanted to be dealt.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's going to depend on who's out there. You know, is Winnipeg taking offers for a guy like Pierre-Luc Dubois, right? Is Arizona moving a guy like Clayton Keller, who signed long-term, but he's, you know, is whatever the hell's going on with that organization.
Well, his dad,
did not switch to his burner account, rookie move, and was pretty much like, yeah, he's not going to be back next year. Like, this is ridiculous. And the people of Tempe, like, made a dipshit decision. It was all this stuff. And he said he was also hacked, which, again, no. Like, that doesn't work anymore. It's the year of our Lord, 2023. Saying you're hacked doesn't work anymore. We know you're hacked if you all of a sudden have, like, an NFT chimp as your profile picture.
Yes.
That's how we know you're hacked.
No one's out there trying to hack Clayton Keller's dad's Twitter. Like, I can't want to get on there and tweet stuff. You know? Like, no one's doing that.
Exactly. So it's going to depend on who's out there, right? Is you look at like Elias Lindholm out in Calgary, who could be a great top six center for this team. But again, it's all going to come down to what are you giving up in that regard, right? Are you moving? Again, you have to give to get. So is it Ullmark? Is it DeBrusque? Is it Hall, Kahlo, Grzelcyk? Again, I don't think Bruins don't have the personnel or necessarily the guys they want to move, that it's going to be like out of like a one for one swap. But if all of a sudden you loop in like a, I don't know, DeBrusque and Carlo and like Lysel for someone or some, like, then you're talking in terms of one moving out a good amount of cap, but while also getting an impact player back. So I think some of the Bruins have to explore. Again, I don't think they want to subtract huge chunks out of this roster, but again, if it gives you an impact player back that addresses a critical area of the roster, especially at center, then you got to listen, right? Because you look at the way this roster is constructed right now, you can't run it back, right? You gotta make some cuts somewhere along the line. So if you're able to kind of kill two birds with one stone by subtracting from this roster, even if it's a good player, but getting someone back that takes you further or addresses a more critical area of the lineup, I think you got to do it. It's just going to depend on what that market's going to be. Because again, we've seen it time and time again where I'm sure you'll see it plenty of times this summer where you'll hear a guy who's been tossed out there in trade rumors and all of a sudden it's kind of out as like, you know, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, like a few years ago. It's like, oh, they're moving him? Oh, okay. Like, so again, it's a long offseason. I'm sure the Bruins will get linked to one of the many guys that are going to probably be dangled out there in the next couple months.
I mean, let's play this game. Because again, Huberto last year, I believe, was going into his last year of his contract and was going to be up after this season, I believe, if memory serves, because then he went to Calgary and signed an extension that made him there long term. But again, the Bruins, if you look at their personnel, right, like David Pastrnak just signed, he has 8 years left on his deal, like just signed a long term deal. He's not going anywhere, right? He's not going anywhere. So then you get to like your top two centers are up, but, you know, old and potentially retiring. You're not getting any, you know, you can't trade them and you're not going to trade them. Like there's nothing there. So then it's Brad Marchand, who we've discussed, who getting older, probably your next captain. You know, what's his trade value going to be like? Is he going to wait? You know, is it to a team he wants to go to? Do you really want to make that deal? That shakes up the culture a lot, especially if you lose Bergeron too. Okay, so Marchand, you wonder about. Then Taylor Hall. Like, Taylor Hall's the guy. Does he carry the same value as Jonathan Huberto? No, not even close. But I do think you get something for him. But the problem is, you're not really trading him to get, you know, to upgrade. You're trading him to free up cap. So there's that. Charlie Coyle at center. I don't really know what kind of value he would have. You kind of need him. Unless you can flip him for someone better, then sure. But I don't know how that's going to work. Zacha, same thing. You got to keep. Then it's DeBrusque, right? And then after that, not really much on forward. Defense, I mean, Lindholm, you have locked up for 7 years. McAvoy for seven. I don't know, you know, are you going to flip Hampus Lindholm for someone? I mean, he just signed here. I don't know if that would really work out. He's got, you know, a no trade. He's got his, you know, parts of his deal he's got to approve. Carlo's another, but I mean, Sweeney kind of alluded to the fact that those guys really weren't going to get moved. And then you have like Ullmark. I mean, that's, you know, so it really comes down, it feels like, I could be wrong, it's Ullmark and Hall. So it's almost like you move one to free cap and you move the other if you want to upgrade, right? Like, I'm making it sound very easy, but let's say you traded Hall for draft capital or prospects and you dealt Ullmark for a legitimate player, right? Like, I don't know, maybe that does it, you know? I'm just trying to think off the top of my head here.
Yeah, no, I mean, whatever the Bruins have to do to get one captain plan and also switch things up while maintaining competitive roster, those are like, you know, two or three critical offseason things that probably a lot of teams can only fixate on one. Bruins have to do multiple things just to like not just remain competitive, but keep the engine running, right? You need to be cap compliant. You need to reload, probably shuffle some things up while also still you have a core in place that, you know, they can't just be like, well, fuck it, let's blow it up. Like, they can't. Like, the core is still too good to do that. So it's all about retooling on the fly. So, you know, it's kind of like, I think Ty Anderson mentioned this, it's kind of like the 2015 offseason, like where, again, Bruins hit a lull after that. So you don't want to have that happen. But that was an offseason where the Bruins had to make some ballsy moves, right? Like moving a guy like Dougie Hamilton and Milan Lucic of, you know, we know how that draft ended up, but, you know, acquiring first-round picks and trying to start a rebuild of some sorts. Like, you're going to have some situations where it's not just going to be like, all right, we have some cap room to work with. We have a really great core in place. We have two guys down the middle that are going to have a set. Let's just tinker around and build around them because we already know what we have at the root of our team. it's not a set in stone now. So you still have to do a lot more, you know, riskier moves or what have you to try to still put this team over the top. And it's going to be tough.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be really tough. And the thing I outlined, you know, I mean, if you did do this, if you did do the Omark and Hall thing, and again, if you dealt Omark for those picks, I believe you wrote about Omark in the Globe recently. You know, could the Oilers or Kings now be super desperate and say we're a goalie away? Like, again, I look at a team like the Oilers. You know, again, I don't know. Like, again, if you wanted a top six center in return for Linus Omark, right? If that's what you want. The Oilers need a goalie. Oh. give me Connor McDavid. Linus Omark for Connor McDavid straight up. Who says no? You know, like, I don't think they're dealing Nugent Hopkins. Also, you have to consider what he's making against the cap. And then, you know, out in LA with the Kings, like, are you getting Byfield for Omark? We've been over this. Probably not. So again, like, you have to find the right fit because the team also needs a goalie. It's not like you have like a top young defenseman who you're probably not going to be able to pay, like a Dougie Hamilton. Like, that's a perfect example of what Dougie Hamilton was in 2015. Young, cheap, you know, Omark is a goalie and has a current contract. Although it's a palatable deal for, you're getting a Vezina winning goalie most likely. And, you know, trading Hall for capital. I mean, Lindholm or Carlo, to me, I don't know how you deal those guys. I mean, maybe you do and say, hey, we're going to run thin on D and we're just going to kind of, you know, wing it for most of the year. But that's not really it's not a safe bet at all.
No,
not a very safe bet. Is there any other thing we're going to get into trades a ton this offseason, obviously. But is there anything else on this roster that you could get creative with? I mean, obviously prospects, but you've dealt so many in the past and you know, I mean, that we've discussed that. Is there anything with the current roster?
I mean, those are kind of the main guys you stand out to. I think probably the guy up front that has probably the best value is probably, or in terms of like a tradable asset, one time like David Pastrnak. I still think DeBrusque is the guy that you have to, I think, look pretty long and hard in that in terms of, you know, for what he's making for next year, for a guy that if he's healthy, and let's say it's Marchand Bergeron back again, or wherever he is in the lineup, could get you 30 goals, right? Like if he's out there the whole year, he was on pace for what, 36 if he didn't break his leg in the Winter Classic, right? So
yes.
He's a guy that I think is definitely worth looking at. And for the Bruins, like, all right, ideally don't want to trade him for what he makes. He's part of the equation for this year. But when you factor in what other teams, you know, might covet to get for a guy like him, you know, a team like Winnipeg could use someone like him, plus what he's due probably next year, where let's say he's, you know, scores 35 goals going to free agency, you know, he's a guy that you may look at him being kind of that same thing of a very good part of the current team, could be part of the future, but for what he's going to cost plus what we could get for him, maybe he is a trade chip. So that's a tough one too, where again, you'd like to keep him because he helped you this year, but is he going to get you something that helps you even more? So I think he's going to be a really intriguing guy to follow along this offseason because I think the Bruins get a lot of value from him, but also get a lot of value by keeping him in your top six.
Yeah, DeBrusque's another good one. That is a very good one. And to see what you could potentially get. Again, I'm okay with trimming the fat on the wings. You know, Fabian Lysell, I don't know if his value is as high as it was last year, but I mean, you do have him in the system if you want to either trade him or try to get him somewhere in the top nine next season. You're going to have to trim fat on the wings anyway, especially with a guy like Taylor Hall making the money he is. But again, Sweeney's pretty good at kind of doing things outside the box that we're not really looking at. So who knows what ends up happening, but I don't want to use up all the trade talk now. We're going to be talking a lot of trades. Yeah, we got lots of time to talk trades. And, you know, I love seeing the trade proposals on Twitter. So those are going to continue, I would imagine. Connor, what can people look forward to from you over at Boston.com and the Boston Globe?
Yeah, we're going to have you covered every step of the way this offseason, whether it be trade discussions, free agency, draft, dev camp, all that stuff. We're going to have you covered every step of the way over at Boston.com. So please follow along over at Boston.com, not only for Bruins, but Celtics forever along this playoff run goes. Patriots are going to be starting up their preseason soon. Red Sox are frucking right along. So we're going to be covered on everything going on in Boston sports. So please read over there. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can at ConnorRyan_93.
Go do all of that. That's Connor Ryan. I'm Evan Marinofsky. Poke the Bear listeners. Have a great rest of your week.